This is the U105 phone-in with Frank Mitchell. U105.
Yes, good morning to you. Now, can the DUP convince the so-called puppets to dance to their tune, or will the business leaders convince the politicians that they know which strings to pull to make a success of Brexit? They all meet today. Also, should priests accused of sexual abuse be allowed a proper funeral? Some aren't, and the association representing priests are calling for clarity. And the reindeer in the shopping centre, is he really as miserable as some people are suggesting? We'll check with you as this programme goes by. 0289033105. Now, the DUP are to meet Northern Ireland business groups over this Brexit deal today. A lot happened over the weekend. Agreement in Europe, but will there ever be agreement at Westminster? Now, senior DUP politicians are to meet a number of Northern Ireland business groups at Stormont over this withdrawal deal, the Brexit deal. But what will they be talking about? Let me speak to Gregory Campbell, who may be part of that team. Gregory Campbell, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
So,
I'm not to answer your first question.
Yes, I was just thinking you may or may not be there, but you're not part of that team. But those who are going to be there, what will they be saying to the business leaders? Will they start with some form of apology in relation to that puppets reference?
Well, I think what it's going to be concentrating on is obviously we want to be frank. We want to hear what business people have to say, and we want to then respond and say, look, you know, there are trade implications, there are constitutional implications, and there are implications well into the future. This is not just about getting something over the line for the next 12 or 18 months. This is something that could well be in place for generations to come. So it's absolutely critical that we get a deal that is right for this generation as well as for future generations. So it'll be a two-way process rather than concentrating on what was said or done in the past.
Yeah, but you have to consider what was said or done in the past. That was proven over the weekend, a weekend of apologies from the DUP. An apology to those business people would be a start, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, I mean, we could get into mutual apologies. You know, there have been things said that I take exception to, but I'm not going to say to people, look, I don't think, you know, on Thursday 3 weeks ago, one of your business people said X, and I don't think that was appropriate. And then they will say, well, you know, Sammy Wilson said something and you said something, Gregory. I don't think that's going to take us forward. What most people are concentrating on is we now have a two-week period where the Prime Minister, even though I think she was completely and utterly wrong in what she did in Europe over the weekend, at least she has helped clarify things from the perspective of narrowing the options down now. There's no one now that can argue in the House of Commons, as some have done up until now, that this is the defeat of this deal can lead to a possible second referendum, because Juncker was absolutely clear at the weekend. He doesn't see that on the horizon. He said Britain's taken the decision, they're leaving, and these are the only terms on which we believe they will be able to leave with our agreement. So that at least is helpful, in that we are now with a yes or no option. And the answer, I believe, is going to be no. We don't want that deal. And then that will concentrate minds significantly.
Okay, so we're sort of running out of time on this. And we're led to believe by Europe and by Theresa May that this is the only deal in town. You're talking to the business leaders today, and these business leaders will ask the most obvious of questions. I'll ask it on their behalf here on the radio to you. If we don't accept the deal as agreed that Theresa May is selling, what exactly, in ordinary layman, a laywoman's terminology, what exactly is the DUP alternative?
Well, when you get a binary choice like yes or no, then you have to take that. And, you know, that's the options that are in front of us. Now, if in the absence of a majority in the House of Commons to give a yes to Theresa May's deal, then the choice is absolutely clear for everybody. I mean, if nobody wants a no-deal exit, and virtually nobody wants that, we certainly don't want one, I don't think the business community want one, And if there isn't a majority in the House of Commons for the deal that's currently on the table, you know, it doesn't take a genius to work out what needs to happen. Then we need to go back to Brussels. Theresa May needs to go back on the plane the next day after the vote. If the vote is the way people are saying it will be, and we're not there yet, but if it is as people are saying that it is, then the plane the next morning, she goes back and she says, "You've seen, you've heard, you've read all about it over the past couple of weeks. I couldn't sell that deal." That's clear, crystal clear for the avoidance of any doubt. No matter how isolated they may be in Brussels, they will be clear she couldn't get it over the line. Now, if nobody wants a no deal, the choices are very clear. Then you go and you try and get a better one.
Do you really believe that there is a better deal to be had? Because no matter how, in your eyes, a better deal to be had, because no matter how we look at it, the backstop is going to keep coming back to be there as it's been described as an insurance policy, or coming back to bite you as an irritant.
Yeah, well, that is a very good point, Frank, because this is the premise, a false premise, on which this deal may well be going to perish. Because the backstop is the thing that is crippling the whole deal. And the backstop was founded on the premise that if we don't get some sort of agreement cobbled together, there's going to be the emergence of what has been euphemistically called a hard border. Now, my point and our point has been consistently, the reason there's not going to be a hard border on the island of Ireland is that there couldn't be. There never was in the past, and there won't be now, and there won't be in the future. When there were 30,000 soldiers here, there couldn't be a hard border. So why does anyone believe there's going to be one now? And even if somebody somewhere put a few checkpoints and a few main crossing roads, there's 150 other roads that everyone could take their goods over and back and not declare them and circumvent it. We all know that. Everybody on the island of Ireland, Northern Ireland and the Republic know that a hard border is a physical, practical, political impossibility. But somehow Theresa May swallowed the line that we have to stop this. We can't afford to have a hard border in Ireland. And even though we said to her, look, it's not going to come about. It's impossible to come about. You can sort of bank that. You can go to Europe and say, look, you don't need to worry about that because it cannot happen. It will not happen. Now, what we're going to have to try and do now is, if the vote goes the way it looks as if it may go, then she will have to go back to Europe and say, A, you've seen I couldn't get the deal through. B, everyone is telling me, and you actually, Leo Varadkar, on behalf of the European Union, said, well, there's not going to be a hard border even if there's a no deal. That's something we've been saying for over 2 years. If that realism dawns the day after the vote, then that will be a significant way to getting us a better deal, because the premise on which this deal was built was wrong.
Having said all of that, a few regulatory checks coming from the United Kingdom into Northern Ireland could resolve it all if there was a wee bit of flexibility from the DUP.
Well, you see, if it's just a case of a few regulatory checks, Frank, I think people would be looking more closely and saying, well, is that it? Are we talking about a barcode? Is that what we're talking about? And when you examine the regulatory alignment that we would be left with if ever, and we wanted ever to try and get out of the backstop, you would see that as time goes on, and remember this, Mike, this is what people haven't considered, at least I haven't read about it in the media. Within 3 short months of us leaving at the end of March, there will be European parliamentary elections in the rest of Europe. Who knows where that's going to go? If you look at the last couple of years and the changes in Europe, who knows what changes that new European Parliament and European Commission that will come as a result of that election will bring, what further demands they will press? You know, because we heard on the very week that Theresa May was finalising the deal, both Barnier and Merkel said, yes, we're in favour of a European army. So who knows where we're going to be this time next year? in the EU whenever that new European Parliament and that new Commission emerges and says whatever they are going to decide and whatever they're going to agree because of the views of the people of the remaining states of the EU. So this is not just about a few regulatory changes that some people in October and November 2018 might think was a minor thing that was stopping a deal. It's much more comprehensive and fundamental than that.
Do you really think today you can change the minds of the people who are involved with Retail NI, Federation of Small Business, CBI, Ulster Farmers Union? Can the DUP change the minds of all of those experts? And they are probably bigger economic experts than you or I, Gregory. Their livelihoods are in the palm of their own hands, and our futures could be in the palm of their hands. Are you confident that you can change the mind of those highly intelligent and successful people that are arguing against you?
Well, I don't know that we will be able to change minds, but I think the one positive thing that needs to come out of today's meeting is that both the business community and ourselves are much more acquainted with the views of people that we're sitting across the table from. That needs to come out, because at the moment our view is that, and this is not a criticism of the business community, if people are in business and they're not that interested in politics other than how it affects their business possibly, if they are told by their government that this is the only deal in town, this is it, it won't get any better than this, I can well understand why people would say, well, if it's the only deal in town and it's as good as it gets, well, get on with it and do it. And it's only then, whenever that is fully explained, the implications of it, what it will mean in years to come, and the problems further down the line in 2, 3, or 4 years, then hopefully there will be a greater understanding between us. It may not lead to minds being changed, but hopefully it will lead to a greater understanding on either side, because it's important that we hear from business, but it's also important that business hears from politicians as well.
Okay, Gregory Campbell of the DUP, one of their MPs, thank you very much indeed. As always, your opinions are welcome. 0289 033 105. Right, 0289 033 105, 077 66 105 105. I want to speak to Eoin Connolly from the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium. Eoin, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm very, very well, Eoin. You're meeting, or one of a group of people meeting with representatives of the DUP today. Are you going to be listening, mm-hmm. or are you going to be talking?
I think it's a bit of both. I think that, we have worked with the DUP for a long time, and we will continue to work with the DUP for a long time after Brexit is done and dusted. And I think both of us have the space to argue our positions with passion, but with also understanding. I heard the tail end of what Gregory was saying there, and it's not just about that we, you know, work in a bubble of a business sphere and that we're beguiled by the Prime Minister and the offer that she's made. A lot of us have been working with politicians in politics for this past 20 years or so, and we do understand what's happening. Now, we are at different polar opposites as far as where the DUP is with the withdrawal agreement at the moment. But one of the things that we want to be able to say to the DUP is that our beef is not with them. We will continue to work with them. Our beef is in London, and we will be, you know, they're 10 or 650 MPs, and what we really want to see is that if the DUP, if the ERG within the Conservative Party, if the Lib Dems, if Labour, if they have a better plan, then now is the time to see the colour of their metal, and now is the time to put it on the table, because quite frankly, the Brexit clock is ticking loudly.
The DUP, of course, make this point that, you know, we're not going to accept what was agreed at the weekend. We're going to turn it down when it comes up for vote on probably the 12th of December. We're all going to go back to the European Union and give them a bit of, you know, our opinion. We're going to get them to change their mind. The DUP feel very confident that they can get a better deal.
Well, I was very privileged to be part of the Northern Ireland business delegation that went to talk to the Article 50 task force. That's Michelle Barnier's team. And even then, they showed a real understanding of the, not only the political situation, but the economic situation for households in Northern Ireland. And they did then, on the back of that, make some moves as far as putting different things in the deal and changing things to make it more palatable to people like the DUP and the Conservative Party. Having talked to some people over this past couple of weeks, you know, when we've seen this text that's on the table now, what I can tell you is that anything that is changed will be frosting, because that cake is already baked.
So you feel that, as the Europeans are saying, and as Leo Varadkar is saying, there's no going back to this. This is it. It's not being renegotiated. You're buying into that theory.
There's two things at play here. One, there's been a great movement and political will within the EU27 to get us where we are now, and they have made concessions, just as the Westminster government have had to. This has taken 2 years to get us to this point, and I can't see that there's a huge amount left to negotiate on, really. But as well as that, the biggest concern for our members, and you know, if it's not this deal, then let's see another deal. But the biggest concerns for our members, the biggest concerns for households in Northern Ireland, is we are 5 months away from crashing out from a cliff edge no deal Brexit, which means we will see tariffs, we will see customs, we will see WTO tariffs, and that would mean that the cheese in your plate's 43% there. And quite simply, because we already have half of the discretionary income of households in Great Britain, because we already have higher costs and lower wages, we are at the eye of the storm here, and any of those cost rises will be felt exponentially more than across GB. So the clock is ticking, and if people have other ideas, then please get them on the table. Let's get them discussed. But otherwise, we're going to have to get a deal here.
And finally, Aidan, have you forgiven the DUP, in particular Sammy Wilson, for the puppets reference?
You know what? I've been at this job long enough that I've a pretty thick skin, and so does Sammy. And you know what? Things in Northern Ireland, especially, you know, over this past few months, I've been in Dublin, I've been in Westminster, I've been in Brussels, and here in Belfast, and we do politics slightly differently, and you have to be able to take things with a pinch of salt. I've always found Sammy to be hugely funny in person, and you know what? This was a joke with a jag, but all forgiven and all's fair in love and Brexit.
All right, Aidan, thank you very much. All is fair in love and Brexit. Let me speak to Jamie DeLargy. Jamie, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Clear this up for me, Jamie, because we hear it so many times from the likes of the DUP and then from the likes of Leo Varadkar, the other side of the argument. Considering the weekend that has just gone by, looking at it with a completely open mind, Jamie, I want you to put your business head on as opposed to your independent head that would be a pro-Remain. I want you to look at it as a business professional. I want you to look at it in the total round of the real world. Is it possible to go back and renegotiate this deal?
In theory, yes, but in practice, no. You know, I do think that what's going to happen is that this withdrawal agreement will be put in front of MPs. I think there's a really good chance that at the first time that it goes in front of them, they will vote it down. I mean, it might go through. There's this charm offensive by Theresa May to try and persuade them to buy into it, and I suppose to maybe encourage Labour MPs to abstain. But I suspect there's a really good chance that it will be voted down. Then there will be, if you like, a mandate given to Theresa May to go back and renegotiate. I think to use Aidan's own phrase there, the cake has been baked. The opportunity to do very much more to it is very limited in scope. Not only because, you know, the EU has made concessions. The UK has made concessions, but the EU has made them. And they probably think they've given away a fair amount. I'll take the particular one. They have agreed that the UK can stay in the customs union, and that will smooth to a great degree, the passage of goods between the UK and the EU. And in a sense, they've given the UK, if you like, you judge them by their action, people wouldn't imagine that. But they have given a big concession to the UK in Brussels. And at the same time, they are agreeing that there would be, that the UK then will be able to pull up the drawbridge and stop free movement of people. So, and they always said in Brussels, there will be no having your cake and eat it. There'll be no cherry picking. You know, you will either have to basically take the four freedoms, but you wouldn't be able to take one thing and then reject another. And they have done that. They've conceded. They've conceded there will not be the free movement of people, and that there will, at the same time, the UK will have sort of privileged access to the EU market. So the notion that it's all been lose-lose-lose from London's point of view is not right. So the notion then they're going to tear this up and radically change it, I just think is not practical. Plus, the EU leaders have all sorts of other problems of their own, and they spend an inordinate amount of time trying to solve this. I think just practically, when you've completed a huge exercise and you've sort of issued that sigh of relief, well, it's done now, it's over to the UK to sign it. And if they don't want to sign it, well, they might then just have a no deal. The idea that they have the willingness, even if someone says, look, there's a scope to do things here and there that we haven't really, pursued in this current agreement, I just don't see it. I simply think that there is not the appetite to go back and revisit this agreement in a major way, and in a willingness to restructure it.
Okay, so in the words of Boris Johnson, I'll ask the question, is it possible to junk the backstop?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, for a start, but then you see, here's another thing. There's an analysis that's just been published today about what it would be like to win the backstop. The backstop is treated or regarded by Boris as some sort of cage that we're locked into, and that really the hope would be that we could break free and have a Canada-style agreement. Now, there is an economic analysis is published in the Financial Times today, and it shows that actually this Canada-style free trade agreement is actually worse for us than being in the backstop, than being in a customs union with the EU. And of course, Northern Ireland, we'd even have greater access, but for the rest of the UK. So in a way, what people are deriding and saying, oh my God, we'll be in this prison, this cage, we won't be able to break free, is actually a bit of a gilded cage in the sense that it's better off than what these people like Boris Johnson, who actually, you know, didn't prove terribly successful at coming up with an alternative plan, that their idea is actually even better. Now, what I'm saying is that the reality is that even the backstop is not too bad. It's not a great thing. And actually, neither of the two options, the backstop nor the free trade agreement, are particularly good for the UK. In fact, the analysis shows there's a cost for everyone. But one is less worse, and the one that's less worse is the backstop. So when they begin to understand that in fact we have, or the public, not Boris Johnson, because he'd never accept this, that actually the arrangement, let's hope we get a really, really, really good free trade agreement that's even better than the Canada one. But if we end up with a backstop, it's not that bad.
Okay, but try telling that to the DUP, Jamie. This is why we're going round in circles in relation to the arguments, the debates and the discussions. Jamie DeLargy, thank you indeed. Jim's got a point that he wants to make. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Frank. Frank, we're back to the same old thing again. But it seems to be a lot of the people seem to forget about what I think is behind the whole thing. We are on this island. Whether we get on with each other or not is neither here nor there. And I think we've got a fantastic group of people, a race of people, both communities, a good workforce, everything going for us. We have two actual borders on this island, whether the people know it or not. One is the land border everybody's fighting about. The other one is the coastal border. And there, I think, lies the whole problem to the matter. We are only connected, the Northern Ireland part and the Republic of Ireland part. And the likes of the EU have been seeing this in their way. They already know that they have other countries on mainland Europe. And if they can see this deal that they have concocted, if you have the likes of Holland, Hungary, Belgium, or some of the other countries who are landlocked, who are not only touching one country, but touching maybe two, three, or four countries, how big a headache would that be for them over there? You know? That's the bit I can't see the way they're doing it. They're turning around and they're putting a big problem here that isn't a problem. There will never be a hard border, and the people of this country know fine rightly. Britain is not going to supply soldiers, troops, policemen to be in the border to be shot or blew up again. That is not going to happen. The Republic doesn't want the bother of having to do the same on their side. And that leaves the EU. What are they going to do? Are they going to bring troops over in a moment? It's not going to happen. It's an impossibility. And Theresa May started this whole negotiation thing, and I admire, because for the simple reason, the stamina she's had over the last couple of years, bearing in mind, whenever she went to the EU, the very first meeting she went out there, she stood in a room, and all the other countries that was there, all the representatives, all stood back, and there was like a no man's land around her. And they were looking at her and pointing at her and putting their hands up to their mouths and talking away. The woman done a 360 and looked round, and there was, as if she was a freak show. None of them wanted to bother with her. Now, because she started negotiations from a low level, she finds it hard. She has settled for a deal, which I personally think isn't what we could get. She said she was in the same position. David Cameron went out there for help off the EU years ago, before the referendum. And they turned their back on him as well.
So you think she can get a better deal?
Well, I'm not saying she could get a better deal, but I think there's a better deal there. I think that the EU would have bigger problems, because there's other countries, and as somebody said earlier on there is going to be other elections in Europe. And don't forget, Mutta, as they call her, Angela Merkel, she's finished. She is not going any further than 2020. And there will be a change around. And if other countries on the mainland Europe get itchy and they decide to leave, how big a problem would that be to the EU? I would say you could find out that is maybe the start of the EU starting to fall apart.
Okay, there's the analysis from Jim. 0289 0333 105.